Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the CGMRadio.com network. Visit CGMRadio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, is it a sin to gamble? Well, my friend, that's a good question. Let me see. Let me think. Is it a sin to gamble? Only if you lose. Actually, it would depend on whether you're going to a casino for recreation or whether you have a gambling addiction. Whenever people go on vacation, they budget a certain amount of money for hotels, dining. It's considered an extravagance because it is a vacation. Maybe family entertainment on a vacation, like live shows or movies. If some of that money is also budgeted for gambling, so be it, provided you know when to quit. If you, say, budget $100 for the blackjack table and aren't willing to quit after you lose your $100, then we have a problem. Now, I know what you're thinking. I know what you think. But, Bob, I have Christian friends. They're emphatic that gambling of any kind is a sin. Yeah, well, Christians say a lot of things. It is the authority of the Bible that we get our beliefs from. That's the way it's supposed to work. The Bible is the word of God. The Bible does talk a lot about being wise with money, especially in the Proverbs. However, I just shared an example on how one may remain wise even at a casino. Besides, who says churches have nothing in common with gambling these days? As the lockdown loosens, casinos have already opened up on reservations. Churches will also be opening up soon, but only to those who make reservations. Now, that fun little irony is just a reminder that supposedly we're still in the midst of COVID-19 and social distancing guidelines. Granted, it's difficult to take that seriously anymore. After all, the governors and mayors assured us for the past 3 months that the closing of businesses and the closing of churches and the closing of practically everything else was only to keep us safe. They were only doing it to keep us safe. They were only telling us to not congregate in bunches to keep us safe. They were only telling us to remain 6 feet apart and socially distant to keep us safe. We care about you. Your safety is our concern. Yeah, right. Sure. All you cared about was our safety. All you wanted to do was keep us safe. Well, how safe did you keep us while stores were being looted and windows were being busted and people were being beaten on the streets? And your response? You told the police to stand down. You justified it by offering the most incredibly stupid reasons. And this is really a peaceful protest. Honestly, it's a peaceful protest. We can see where it may not always look that way. Oh, this is democracy. This is just a First Amendment freedom. Hey, let them blow off a little steam tonight. Then tomorrow, it won't be so bad. No, it wasn't as bad the next day. It was much worse the next day. It metastasized the next day, and even more the day after that, because you emboldened a mob. It continued in city after city, all across the country, from sea to shining sea. Buildings were being burnt to the ground. People were being beaten. People were being shot. People were being murdered. Tell us, governors. Tell us, mayors. Tell us, those of you who can't distinguish between fascism and a constitutional republic. Try explaining how the sickening murder of a retired African-American police chief has advanced the cause of civil rights. And that's just one of hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of examples just in the last 2 weeks. And you told the police to stand down. The very same police, incidentally, who just a week prior to all this were obeying your orders to arrest people for what? For opening their salons, for opening their gyms. What did we hear from you then? The police officer is our friend. The police officer is only trying to do his job. You have respect for the law, don't you? As governor, as mayor, I will not stand for anybody not abiding by the law. And the police officer is there. He's just doing his job. Yeah. And now, oh, now as building after building and city after city gets torched and looted, you talk about defunding the police. You talk about abolishing the police. Well, don't ever talk to us about keeping us safe again. Personally, I never bought it anyway. I have made that abundantly clear. It's clear to everyone who's been following this radio show during the lockdown every single week. It was never about safety. I never believed it was about safety. It was about power. Your power, Governor. Your power, Mayor. Well, maybe people will pay attention now because the power grab just found a new crisis to exploit for political points. Headline last week, there were so many of them, but here was a headline. Years ago, you would have thought you were reading this in Mad Magazine. City Council of Minneapolis will disband police department with veto-proof bill. See, it started out with stand down tonight, just tonight. And didn't take long to turn into, oh, well, we're going to disband you. Ladies and gentlemen, this Minneapolis council, I just hope, don't do it right now, because I want you to listen to my show. Don't do it right now. But as soon as we're done, I just hope you go online and see the proud picture that the Minneapolis City Council took, this celebration photo op of the Minneapolis City Council. You just have to see it for yourself. The smug, ignorant, arrogant smiles of these blithering idiots. They actually think this emboldening capitulation will spare their own homes when the vandals, looters, and shooters come their way. My friends, please pay careful attention. Anarchy never remains anarchy. It's not going to be here very long. It is immediately, you study history, it is immediately followed by a police state. Only it won't be the same police. They will be different police. These police, the governors will love. Yes, unless the fires are put out soon, a dictatorship will rise from the ashes of the ultimate fire. Mark my words, make no mistake, the same leftist, shameless politicians, flame-fanning agitators, and fascist thugs who hijacked an originally valid peaceful protest, hoping you were too stupid to notice their fascism simply because they named themselves Antifa. All these collaborations, all these circumstances will bring about a dictatorship that Americans have never seen before. If you want to know what it will be like, if you want a sneak preview, just seek out those who immigrated to the United States to escape such tyranny in their former countries. There have always been bad cops, just as there have always been bad people in any profession. The majority of police are still brave men and women who are honestly trying to keep us safe. The majority of politicians are also, never mind over there, we digress. But I realize that in the midst of hysteria and mob mentality, any attempt at common sense and logic falls upon deaf ears. So go ahead, mayors. Go ahead, governors. Go ahead, city councils. Pass your idiotic laws. Pat yourselves on the shoulders. Give yourselves a high five in the same mirror where you can look at your own smug smiles. You too, sheep. Cheer them on. Just remember, if you're having trouble with our current police, and they come in all colors, incidentally, if you're having trouble with our current police who try to maintain law and order in a constitutional republic, just wait until they get replaced with the other kind of police, the police who will arrest only those who dare to speak out against the new government. The police who will politely escort Lady Liberty away in handcuffs. You will wish then that you could go back through time and activate your brain before climbing aboard the train, the same train Stalin and Mussolini would have been proud of, the same train Hitler made run on time. Oh, yeah. Almost forgot to mention that Adolf and Benito knew how to work crowds, too, to get into power. By the way, I did say just one moment ago that this was the hijacking of an originally valid, peaceful protest. Yes, I acknowledged the peaceful protests for George Floyd. But if you missed that part, then you were listening with your emotions and not your ears, which means my words were chosen especially for you. There is hope. As I say week after week, our hope is in God, but God uses people who speak the truth instead of reciting talking points and repetitious mantras. For those who have had their guilt buttons pushed, to those listening who never viewed themselves as racist before, who are now feeling pressured into accepting a narrative that you actually are racist. You never thought you were before, but gee, they say you are, maybe you are, and they're telling you that you should learn and sit down and learn from African Americans and get a re-education from their point of view. All right, I encourage you to do so. But first, there are many African Americans who could give you a better education, who offer a much different perspective than what you are hearing from the mainstream media. People like Thomas Sowell, Ben Carson, Shelby Steele, Walter Williams, Charles Payne, Alveda King, Candace Owens, Diamond and Silk, Herman Cain, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, Pastor Daryl Scott, Fox News contributor Lawrence Jones, radio hosts David Webb, and Larry Elders, and there are many, 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 many others. When we listen to them, we get a much different narrative. They do not deny genuine racism. Neither do they ascribe to this all-white people are racist garbage. Let's listen now to the fabulous Candace Owens of Turning Point.
I'm tired of blaming the white. I'm tired of your stupid posts. I'm tired of your little black squares that are supposed to mean something. A bunch of celebrities that want to look empowered. They don't care about you. Are you stupid? Your neighborhoods are burning down, not theirs. They're going to fund people. Christine, oh, I'm going to fund getting people out of prison from behind my gated community that's never going to get burned down, right? It's never going to get burned down. From behind these security guards that defend me and will shoot first and ask questions later. But I'm going to fund the people that are burning down the black neighborhoods and pretend that I'm with black people. We are just complete jokes to the left, right? Because the thing is they do it every 4 years and we keep falling for it. It's like they're not even switching it up. They're not even switching it up. They're just ruining another generation of black Americans every 4 years. And you want to know what the result of these protests are besides our neighborhoods burning down, besides our black youth being arrested? We just signed up for another 60 years of black poverty. And during those 60 years, you're going to have AOC and leftist politicians stump on the issues and claim it's because of systemic racism and not because they sent a bunch of white Antifa thugs to burn down the neighborhoods and to burn down the black businesses and to take all of these bricks to windows and businesses and force the business owners to leave. People that can afford to leave and leave these black communities depleted with no jobs. They're going to pretend it's because of white people, not because of their bricks and their riots and their protests.
That was Candace Owens, a conservative African-American woman, a very brave woman. When we return, you will hear the words of a very brave man and a very brilliant man. He's joining me in the studio as our special guest. I'm very honored to have him. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
I'm joined today by Mark Walters. Mark and I have been participating for several years now in Bible studies and prayer meetings together. He's a good man, a man of wisdom, a man who knows the scriptures well. Mark is a conservative African-American. He has grown up experiencing the regular old-fashioned garden variety racism from white people, but he also gets it from friends and family and acquaintances bothered that he's not liberal. Mark has a varied and interesting career. He's been in the U.S. Navy. He was there for 9 years. He served as a quartermaster, second-class petty officer in navigation. He has worked as a correction deputy for the Sheriff's Department from 1990 to 1999. He has a Bachelor of Science degree from San Diego Christian College in Human Development. He's done it all. He slices, he dices. I'll have to ask him if he speaks five different languages and was ambassador to France, but he has been a public school teacher, a substitute teacher, a homeschool teacher. He's been involved in street ministry and prison ministry. He's been a volunteer chaplain. Mark, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Well, it's an honor to have you, and I've got a bunch of questions. Let me start with this one. And I'm not going to pretend it isn't a loaded question, because it's as loaded can be loaded. Mark, when I tell people that I'm Jewish, but that I do not vote Democrat, they're surprised, because most Jews in America are very liberal. Now, I imagine you get a similar reaction when people hear that as an African American, you have rejected not just the Democratic Party, but the entire leftist liberal narrative. What is it like to walk in the shoes of a conservative African American? And if you don't mind giving your age, since you're not a woman, maybe you won't mind giving your age. You've been around a long time, so you've seen a lot of things change. Tell us what it's like walking in the shoes of an African American who's conservative these days.
Well, Bob, yes, I'm 58 years old, and I've been somewhat in the same situation like yourself. I have experienced some of the same type of reaction you've gotten. For instance, in the 2008 election of President Barack Obama, I found myself on the same end of that when I had mentioned to several of my relatives that I wasn't going to vote for him instead. Because I was going to vote for John McCain that year, they were really taken back too. Many of them couldn't believe that I actually were turning my back on the first black president. But I was trying to help them to understand, you know, as a Christian, we're not really called to look at and try to judge people simply because they're part of our race and because they're people that look like us and all that. We really are, as a Christian, we're really salt and light, and we should be looking more or less to the person that would best represent the values of God to the world. And so I can understand what you felt like and what you have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you grew up, I know you've lived in, you were born in Alabama, you've been back and forth, Mississippi, Texas. Now, you were younger when the Jim Crow laws were still going on, but your family was still affected by them, and things didn't get that much better, even though they legally got changed. So what was it like being in the South? What is the difference living now in a place like California? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, like when I grew up in the South, actually, like I grew up in a Delta area of Mississippi, and one of the things that when I attended school, unlike what I'm experiencing since I've been out in California right now, the school pretty much was separation between both black and white. In reality, in the city where I live, there was an actual real railroad track that actually separated, you know, the whites and the black. We actually lived on the south side of the railroad track for the predominant black community.
Separated with a literal railroad track.
A literal railroad track.
Wow.
And, this is in order to, when we attended school, when I attended school, actually, it was completely almost all black. When I attended Head Start and attending school there, there was literally no blacks in the school where I grew up. I think when I got to elementary school, I can recall very, very well one white student that was in my class, and maybe there was several others, but it was very, very few and far between. So also when I later on got to high school, I think in my class right now, when I graduated high school, There was really only three whites. So I understand what it is to grow up in a place where, you know, with my own race, with my own color, and also growing up in a world where blacks and white actually were separated because of race and where they lived.
Now, I know that you're a God-fearing man. I know that you study the scriptures, and we've had lots of different conversations just about the state of the country in general. I mean, even apart from race and things like that. Where do you see us right now, just with all that's going on with between the pandemic, between the evangelical churches, between just where they were even before February? I know a lot's changed in the last few months, but you used to talk to me about your concern for the condition of our country even before we slid into all these things that have taken over the news.
Well, right now I see us in a very, very strange and strange situation right now. I think as a nation right now, we're obviously incredibly divided. The current president right now in the White House have ruffled quite a few feathers, and I think right now we're very, very divided. And where we are right now, still, it seemed to be right now in the minds of many people, they're trying to take many of us as Black America anyway back to a time in our life that really has passed. I believe we have actually grown. I think right now, there have been great advancements right now for us as Black American. And what I'm concerned with right now, that there is a perception right now that somehow we're in a time warp of some sort. You know, people are actually fearful for their lives. We have famous athletes right now. I've heard one athlete make the statement that the issue that was going on between the NFL and Blacks regarding salaries, he came out and indicated the situation made him feel like he was a slave again. I read about one personality in the media who indicated that she's afraid to even go out right now. A lot of people are really afraid for their life, and right now it seems like we're living in the best of time for both Black and whites in America, but.
And yet a lot of these people are feeling that sincerely because that's all they're getting in the media. So on one hand, we can't blame them. I have to say, when I listen to actors and football players who are literal millionaires and they're talking about how bad they have it, and it's sometimes it's difficult to take that seriously. There are white people that live in poverty in this country. There are a lot of Black people that live in poverty in this country. There are white millionaires. There are Black millionaires. But boy, you try saying that to somebody, and that's just considered anathema right now.
Well, you know, Bob, take for instance, like when I grew up in a home where we didn't have an actual car. My mom never did have a car. If we didn't get a ride or get some type of transportation from someone in the community, we literally had to walk. We didn't have street buses in the small town where I was from. Now, here my life is right now for my own children and for my family. I have never had a day since, since I've been working on my own without having my own vehicle. We've had more than one car. I was just looking at the comparison. When my mom grew up, she was living in government-issued homes, you know. And right now, I've owned two properties since I've been here. I've seen the transformation of the bounty of what America has given to Black people and give to whites. So, despite the fact I know there's a perception of some type of a time warp that we're going back, I can still see the bounty that God has given, and it's given our land right now. And I'm just hoping that many more Blacks and whites can begin to just take advantage of where we are in our relationship. We're not perfect, but we are a long way from where we once was.
Okay, I've got two stories that I want to get out of you. One would be in the present, because I want to hear about some conversations you've had with Black family members or friends or acquaintances who are upset with you. Just maybe that's how your conversations went. But to keep this chronological, I want to go back to the time when you were growing up, when there was a lot of racism. Were you ever personally the victim of racism in terms of slurs, or did you ever get beaten up, or were you ever told you weren't allowed on a team? Are there any things that happened to you personally?
Well, when I grew up, believe it or not, Bob, in the world in which I live, myself, I had very few episodes myself with whites because we were quite separated.
You were separated, you hardly ever saw them. Yeah.
And yes, I saw them, but at the same token, my interaction didn't bring me sometime until I got into my later high school years when I began to work, when I had to start interacting with white in the city in which we live. But for the most part, I actually saw it happen on occasion. I can recite an instant for, just for instance, in the city where I grew up, you could actually, at the time, I remember becoming a Christian in 1976. And believe it or not, when I became a Christian in 1976, it was the work of a white man coming into on a black side of town, sharing the gospel, and a lot of young black boys becoming Christians for Jesus.
So I'm imagining nobody viewed this guy as a racist, but I mean...
Well, at the time, we really
did. You just saw his love, and he wanted you to know Christ.
There you go. Well, he shared the gospel. From that point on, I'm where I'm at right now because he touched the life of a lot of young men that affected my life in return. So, like I said before, I saw evidence at time within the white community because I remember once mentioning to my eighth grade teacher, and her name was Mrs. Shaw, I indicated once we became a Christian because I said, hey, now that we're Christian, whites and blacks can fellowship with each other. Myself and another young man named Ronald, we said, hey, we'll probably just go to your church this coming Sunday. And she immediately said, well, no, you can't come to my church.
Oh, my gosh. She made that statement? But
that's true. Right in the classroom.
Wait, I want to get that. She says, well, now blacks and whites can fellowship together. But they said, great, we'll be at your church. And she said, how did she try to explain that? What was look on her face? Was she just blushing red when she said that?
Well, believe it or not, Mrs. Shaw, about one of the most sweetest and nicest person, despite she was white, and many of the students, both black, the majority in my junior high school, for sure, were all black. And they had great words to say about it. But that is the word she gave us. She said that we can't, it wouldn't be a good idea for us to
show up in her church. She didn't mean that she, of course, I guess to be fair to her, she didn't mean that she personally wouldn't want to bring you. She was just being honest about the way others would treat you. Or do you think even she herself was uncomfortable?
Well, I perceived that it seemed like Michelle had a really good, she was very concerned in teaching and educating people. And she in herself seemed to be welcoming of people. But I think the point she was trying to let me and my friend know, we probably need to learn a little bit more about what church dynamic and the old adage that the most segregated hour in America is, you know.
Which is still true.
Yes.
It's Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
White churches and black churches. And it's by design from both peoples, really.
Sure.
That's interesting. So when she made this statement that we can all fellowship together, did she mean when we get to heaven or did she mean someday, but maybe not this year? What do you think she... How did she reconcile that with her discomfort?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure quite where her mind was in that regard, but I know how I responded and myself. Around one, it was a realization to me that I hadn't had a situation in which someone would tell me that we could come together as Christian and fellowship. Most of all of my fellowshipping then, I was still young as a believer, was only with blacks who were Christian. And the one a white gentleman who was, man, he showed really the love of God to us. But it was really quite interesting. And the church where she attended was a very, very beautiful white Baptist church within the city. So most everybody knew what the church was, but it really was just quite odd. Like, I never did question her commitment to Jesus Christ, but I knew in my heart how I was supposed to live as a person.
Well, that is something else. Okay, now let's flash forward to the present. Tell me about a conversation that you've had today with not just other African-Americans, but I bet you meet a lot of white liberals that say, what the heck are you doing being conservative, voting for Trump? Tell me about how some of those conversations go and what kinds of things you have said to maybe challenge them.
Well, I've had episodes in where persons, for instance, on jobs that when you bring up, if there's a situation when politics arrive and you begin to indicate to the fact that you're a conservative, they really look at you really quite strange. I mean, they're somewhat taken back at what you really are claiming. So one of the things that I have what I try to do really is help people to understand, just as, for instance, like in the world of education, we really have to look at people and see that we come from a wide, different views of a whole lot of issues. One of the things that you champion in education is the individuality of people. And so I try to help people to understand, we have to look upon blacks who have a viewpoint when it comes to politics in the same way. We're individual. We're not just simply a cookie cutter image, you know, that everybody comes in. I look over and I see, well, that's a Democrat, and that's a Democrat simply because they're being black. You really have to ask the person. And so I'm really straightforward in letting people know, really, one, as a Christian, I hold God and the values of the scripture before me when I begin to look into politics. And I believe that's what we need to begin to look at as American. We need to be very careful that when we look at issue of putting people in power, giving them our vote, we need to make sure that they have values that identify with the teachings of the scriptures.
Yeah. Now, I grew up in the 60s too. I'm a little older than you. Oh, I guess I could say I'm a lot older than you. But yeah. As I was brought up, and I part of the definition of racism was that if you ever ascribe a monolithic characteristics to one race, that that's a sign of racism. So it would seem to me that anybody who says all black people should be Democrats or no black person could ever vote for Trump, isn't that inherently a racist generalization right there?
Well, I'd really consider it is. I mean, I just heard the opponent of the current president, vice president, former Vice President Joe Biden make the statement, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Well, you know, this is really an insult, you know. I like to believe, one, that that's sort of like a put down. You're beginning to look at blacks that they have to somehow toe the line for what the Democrat Party is really looking at. I have the mindset, really, you know, in Christ Jesus, you know, we're unique. But the Lord allows for our individuality to come out. And I think that when you, as a Christian, you look at the world and you see the uniqueness of how God has made you. You are not simply just following the herd. We don't have a herd mentality that Jesus saved us to. If we're following anyone, we're following Christ.
Absolutely. Now, defunding the police, I want to get your opinion on that, but I want to play a couple of clips. First, you heard me mention in my monologue, and of course, no news. We've been following this all week long. In Minneapolis, the city council decided not to defund the police, but to literally shut down the police department. And it's got to be approved by the mayor, but they said it was a veto-proof bill. And then the president of the city council was on CNN, and I didn't think it would happen anytime these last 10 years, but the CNN anchorwoman actually asked her a very good question. Brendan, let's go ahead and play that clip.
We have a state action against our police department, which gives us legal mechanisms in the very short term. You know, there's lessons from all over the country, all over the world that we're looking to take immediate steps while we work toward building the systems that we would need to imagine that future.
Do you understand that the word dismantle or police free also makes some people nervous? For instance, what if in the middle of the night my home is broken into? Who do I call?
Yes, I mean, I hear that loud and clear from a lot of my neighbors. And I know, and myself too, and I know that that comes from a place of privilege, because for those of us for whom the system is working, I think we need to step back and imagine what it would feel like to already live in that reality where calling the police may mean more harm is done.
Your response to that, Mark?
Well, you know, one thing, that's a sad statement that she makes, because one, I would like to ask her, has she considered that many moms, individuals that may be in the predominant black community who call the police, do they somehow feel that this is like a privileged position? I think that most Americans feel that when they call the police, that it is their duty and responsibility to expect someone to respond to them in a crisis. And I think right here, what we're looking at right now, but we're at the point right now, the black community is suffering really quite a bit right now. We're losing quite a bit of our young men when it comes to black on black violence. we're losing quite a few of our community when it comes to abortion. Now we have the issue where the oppositional party right now to the president are suggesting that we need to throw law enforcement completely overboard. We're removing a barrier to civil society. And this is quite alarming.
It really is. Now, this next one should be just as alarming. It would be laughable if it wasn't so alarming. As you know, it's gotten even worse. The big news was Minneapolis, and then the bigger news became Seattle, where people have literally commandeered a portion of the city and declared its independence from the United States. And the governor of the state of Washington was asked about it. Go ahead, Brendan.
Governor, I'd like to ask you about what's going on in Seattle. There's this thing called the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. What's your thought on that? The fact that the protesters have taken that over and not allowing people to come and go freely? Regarding the National Guard.
Well, that's news to me, so I'll have to reserve any comment about it. I have not heard anything about that from any credible source. Not that you're not credible, it's just like before I espouse an opinion, I should know of which I speak.
I know we feel like we're in the twilight zone now, Mark, but would you like to respond to that?
Well, I know if that had been Donald Trump right now, there would be all kind of stories indicating how he was behind the eight ball, not knowing what's really happening in the world. If you got the governor of the state and he has no idea that a portion of a major city within his state has been commandeered by people, and he has no idea about what's happening right now, that seemed to be, to me, a big dereliction of duty here. I think we're looking at people right now that are actually in charge themselves that have simply lost vision of what their duties and responsibility are to their fellow man. I think this is very, very serious. They are overlooking, the Bible tells us that everyone ought to be subjected to authority. And if we are to be subjected to authority, then there's an understood mindset behind that authority itself need to be accountable to the people. So there is a duty and responsibility for that governor and anybody else to begin to get themselves in the game and find out what's really happening, because the people of that state, as well as any state, is looking for someone to protect, looking for the government to protect their civil liberties.
Yeah, I guess in life we all make decisions whether we believe somebody or not. We can't read their minds. We can't prove it. I don't believe for a second that the governor of that state did not know what was going on. I do not believe it was a surprise for him to hear it. I think what was a surprise is that he was asked about it and asked to give an account, and he didn't know what the heck to say. You were talking about how Trump would be treated. The only guy that could get away with it would be Joe Biden. If Joe Biden said he never heard, we'd all believe him, and people would just smile and go, well, that's Joe. Okay, my special guest today is Mark Walters. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connors' strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
And now it's time for another episode of Wisdom and Consistency from the Left with your old pal, Bob. Thank you. Thank you. Here's the wisdom today. Border walls and fences are wrong. In fact, border walls and fences are immoral unless You want to occupy and border off a six-block chunk of Seattle and claim it as a sovereign autonomous territory with a real cool name like Chaz. You've been listening to Wisdom and Consistency from the Left with your old pal, Bob. I think my friend Jim Barrier was right last week. This applause sounds like somebody on a golf course that made a putt. I could, you notice the difference between announcers at a ball game. At the ball game, it's, hey, he hit a grass. At a golf, it's kind of, he's on the green now. I believe he's taking a 5-iron. Anyway, welcome back, our special guest, Mark Walters. Well, Mark, I've been asking you a lot of questions, and I have some more, but I want to give you a chance to just share some things that are on your mind. The time that we have left, and we'll run out of time quickly, so let me thank you ahead of time for coming on today. It's been awesome having you, and we hope you'll come back. But what kinds of things are on your mind today that maybe I haven't asked you yet that you really want our audience to know?
Well, Bob, I think there are some things we can try to look at in dealing in this crisis right now that's facing our country, the continuous protesting, the destruction of property that we're seeing all around us. I think some of us can just step back and try to look at what it is about this great nation that we really love and what are some of the things that we can probably do to try to make it a better place. I mean, and it doesn't really cost us a whole lot of, that doesn't cost us money somewhere that some program need to come about for us to do it. And this morning, is when my wife and I were looking at the scriptures a little bit, some of the verses that we read over gave me just some ideas in my own mind that helps to give me some type of direction in the midst of this. And like I said, I hope it helps others. One of the things I think we can look at, learn to be considerate of others and consider that they themselves are human like we are. You know, one of the things about America that I look at is that we have what is called a form of government that has what we call checks and balances. We have the executive branch, judiciary, and the legislative, and they all are supposed to check on each other. And when we look at checking, we're talking about an issue where, why would we check? We're checking because we all have faults. Right now, we're looking at our police department, and some of us are beginning to look at the police department as though they're somewhat beyond human, but they're just like us. So I think if we can begin to consider that, put ourselves in the position where these men and women are that go out on the street and have to do this job every single day. I think one of the things we can also learn to do, avoid complaining. There's something in life we can look at and that we don't have to complain about. I mean, I'm very, very blessed to have a home in myself. I'm very, very blessed to have my wife, and I'm very, very blessed to have my children. And I'm, like I said, I'm very, very blessed to have friends, somebody like yourself. And also, I think what we can embrace, and I think what a lot of the people right now in the protesting world need to look at, we can look at giving thanks. If we can have a mindset to give thanks about our situation, as Christian, we're always called to give thanks. The scripture tells us what? That God's blessings are new every day. They're new every morning. That's what we're told in Lamentation, that God's blessings are new every day. Then the scriptures always also tells us, learn to be appreciative, you know? And I think if we're going to be appreciative, that means that we need to look at something that we can appreciate. I think our law enforcement personnel bring a lot of things to our community each day that we can appreciate. We should be able to appreciate it. We can pick up a phone and call 911 and have the hope that somebody is going to respond on it. Now, right now, we're seeing some officers who are retiring and resigning.
And you know what? It's a very dangerous, but I don't blame them one bit.
Yeah. The sad thing, that's what's going to, we're going to probably see a lot more that if we're not very, very careful, we need to be. And, you know, right now, I'm pretty sure in many states right now, they're going to be looking for men and women to take up the mantle to do that job. But if we sit here and tear them down, we ignore the fact that they're a fault. They have falling just like all of us.
Yes.
And we're going to lose men and women that really want to sacrifice their life and give us a better community in which we can live.
Exactly, because you can't fight a true front war. They put their lives in jeopardy. They have a right to assume that the mayor and the politicians are going to have their backs, and they don't. I mean, city by city and state by state, it's different. Mark, there's a lot of common slogans and statements going on today. They're very popular. I want to just give you a chance to respond to them. Systemic racism. How do you respond when you hear that phrase?
I personally don't believe there's necessarily systemic racism. I personally believe there's personal racism. I believe individuals may be dealing with that issue in the heart. And that's an issue of the heart that only God himself can deal with. I believe that you can go pretty much any place in our nation right now. Look, for instance, I mean, prior to this president, we had the first black president in the White House. I mean, right now, one of the most beautiful things about America that you can start off the lowest point in our society and find yourself at the highest place in our society.
And growing up in the South, you experienced real, legal, systemic, by law, racism. And so you're seeing a contrast now, and you're trying to share it with another generation that doesn't remember what it was like to go through real systemic racism.
Sure. You know, when I attended high school, the high school that I went to, Bob, the same high school, I think in around 1970, and about that time, to avoid complying with the civil rights law of 64 and also of 68, many of the white schools, especially in Mississippi and some of the other surrounding states, decided to move to private schools. They still wanted to be separated from blacks. And they still did. They actually, this is something they still were able to practice, that despite the fact, because you weren't going to find a lot of black parents in Mississippi at that time that were going to be sending their kids to private school. So still to avoid it, this is what they did. But I think what God helps you to understand, he still helps you to look through it, that you're still in the greatest nation on the face of the earth, that God can give you a heart where you can look at your fellow man despite their failing and forgive them with the grace of Christ.
Very well said. We only have a few minutes left. This is the hottest one at all. Respond to the phrase, Black Lives Matter.
Well, Bob, look, if there's anybody that believed that Black Lives Matter, it would be, I happen to be black.
I think so.
You know, the scripture said, Jesus said, no man has ever yet hated himself. And so I don't hate myself. I'm a black man. I appreciate being black. My wife is black. I have no issue with who I am and what God has made me. The Bible tell us that we're the work of God's hand, you know. The Bible tells us that God has made his dwelling with us if we're in Christ. So when someone tells me Black Lives Matter, I look at that. Look, all mankind are the work of a living God, no matter who they are, whether they're white, they're black, no matter what their race are. We take the image of God. It's the image of God that gives us our significance, and that's what gives me my own personal significance.
Absolutely. Mark, what a pleasure to have you on our show. My response when people say Black Lives Matter and they want a response, are you asking me to respond to the statement or the organization? Because I think they're two very different things.
Sure. Well, I've been blessed to be here, Bob.
It's been an honor. And please, we want to start having you come back more often. And we will see you next week.